1930. Donald, can I get you
You
to
sure
do the
can.
Pledge of Allegiance?
Sure
We've got
can.
the flag over here.
Flag's behind you. That'll be nice today. They'll give you a chance to go.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
wait. Give him a second first. So sorry.
Sorry.
No worries. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay.
All right. Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If I could get a council roll call, please. John Furyk?
Present.
Eric Duane? Alexis Federico?
Here.
Robert McDonald?
I'm here.
Michael Rodigan?
Here.
Stephen Vargas? And Stephanie Wade?
Present.
We have quorum. All right. Thank you very much. Okay, a couple reminder for today's meeting. Thank you everyone for joining us. Please set your cell phones to mute or vibrate if you would for the duration of the meeting. We're now going to proceed to the agenda of the meeting. The agenda contains a brief description of each item to be considered. Except as otherwise provided by law, no action shall be taken on any item not appearing in today's agenda. Public comments must be within the subject matter jurisdiction of this board or council and up to 3 minutes. So do I have any public comments? All right, Mr. Coburn, please come on up.
Stand up?
Oh, no,
you can sit there. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Nelson Coburn. I'm the Commandant for the Marine Corps League South Coast Attachment. We have our meetings the third Tuesday at the Elks Lodge in San Clemente. The purpose of our Marine Corps League is we're nationally recognized, the only nationally recognized Marine nonprofit. I mean, there is the 5th Marine Support Group, which they do great work, but we're nationally chartered by Congress. We fundraise for Marines, their spouses and children, FMF corpsmen, as well as chaplain. We have a few fundraising events throughout the year. We just did Festival of Wells. We have concerts in the park, golf tournament in August, Marine Ball in November, and Toys for Tots for Christmas. That's all I have. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Anyone else with a public comment? Okay, that concludes the public comments section of the agenda. Moving on to the presentations portion. Our presenter today, Shane Wood. Okay, well, if Shane comes in later, we can move this around, but you should have in your agenda a nice presentation regarding fentanyl use, specifically the epidemic and crisis within Orange County. So I would encourage you to review that. If anyone needs additional copies, you can contact us and we can provide it. And we'll also post a copy of the presentation on the OFVAC website. So you can just search Orange County Veterans Advisory Council, click on the agenda and it should pop up. And then if Shane appears later, we will try to get that presentation in. Okay, moving on to action items. So all items are approved by the two motions. So we've got two action items on today's agenda. The first is the California Association of County Veterans Service Offices, the CACVSO panel speaker. We have a recommended action item to ask Orange County Community Services to consider requesting from the Board of Supervisors a one-time budget increase to the VSO budget for allowable reimbursement for one OCVAC member to attend the June 2024 state conference. Do I have anyone that would like to make a motion, I guess, to discuss the item?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second it.
Okay. So
I'll just add that I think this might pertain to me if the council wanted to recommend it. I was invited by David West, who's the president of the California Association of County Service Officers, Veteran Service Officers, to attend. And he specifically has in mind a panel that he wants to do on LGBT veterans. I met him at in Sacramento when I was there testifying on SJR 6. That's the Don't Ask, Don't Tell Discharge Characterizations Resolution that the council has previously supported. I was there on the 22nd of April. Myself and another veteran were brought in by the author of the bill, Senator Caballero, and we were her primary witnesses. That bill passed out of committee, and I understand it's supposed to move forward, and they're hoping to get both the House, both the Assembly and the State Senate to vote on it. And just the resolution itself advocates that the President of the United States and the Congress move expeditiously to create a pathway for relief for all those veterans who were discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the prior period of prohibition that went from 1949 until 2012. And fewer than 10% of the veterans that were kicked out have even bothered to apply. And many who have applied were either rejected or turned down for very specious means. In fact, the gentleman who spoke with me, Jonathan Willett, is a case in point. He's an Air Force veteran, and he's from an Air Force family. His father's a retired Air Force NCO, grew up as a gay kid, and he chose to serve under Don't Ask, Don't Tell and Hide His Sexuality. When it became discovered, he received NJP after NJP for kind of BS reasons, and he wound up getting kicked out. He did apply for an upgrade, but he only got an other than honorable from a dishonorable, and it had a huge impact on his life. He's still estranged from his family over this. It's, you know, he was homeless for a long period of time afterwards. So that's essentially what the bill is. And so I think attending this meeting would be an opportunity both to show how active we are here in Orange County, because we've been very active on this. I think the service officers are very interested in this, in the topic of LGBT veterans. That's all I have.
And I'd just like to comment, a couple comments, first being on the procedural mechanism. So those in the audience, and I guess for the benefit of the rest of the board. So our mission and our goal is to make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors. We don't have any independent authority of our own other than to set meetings. So, you know, we are to liaise within the veterans community, become familiar on the issues, and then make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors. So we don't have the budget on our own to send Council Member Wade as a representative to speak at this very, I think, important opportunity that not only provides the services to veterans in Orange County statewide, but really kind of highlights some of the work that we've been doing here in Orange County with our recommendations to the Board of Supervisors regarding SJR 6 and other, and we've set several recommendations to the Board of Supervisors in Orange County about this. So I think this is a great opportunity. Unfortunately, we're just a little hamstrung because we don't have a budget. So I think working with staff, the best that we can come up with is essentially this action item, which is to basically ask them to consider funding for this event. You know, I recognize that this could potentially become a slippery slope. What we don't want to do is create a situation where we are continually going to the Board of Supervisors and asking them to send us to conferences and spend money, because, you know, I think if you read the bylaws, you know, I think the county would appreciate us, you know, operating kind of within the confines and not running up additional costs of the county. But I think that this is a one-time exception that is really, or not even exception, I should say, but a really great opportunity and something that we should encourage. I mean, not only asking Orange County Community Services to try to find funding to this, but approach our individual Board of Supervisors who appointed us and recommend, you know, whether it's a discretionary fund or however they can get the funds to try to send that. So I'm in very much in support of this action item. Does anybody have any other comments?
Give me more details on like where the state conference is or what you're expecting costs and days wise.
A quarterly conference, and my intent is to just travel up for an overnight. It's at a casino in the hills outside of Sacramento.
Cash Creek.
Correct.
Yeah. And then are there like other events that would help benefit Orange County as well? Like not just the specific panel, but like where can we draw in more resources from this entire event?
I haven't seen the entire list of events, but if I'm up for a day, I'm going to try and network as much as I can.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, and this would be fulfilling our, as a council, you know, mission statement of going and providing the additional information and resources to, you know, to Orange County veterans and stuff, and bringing those to the attention of the board of supervisors. So, do I have any other council members who want to participate in the discussion? Okay, can I, does anyone have a motion concerning action item?
You have a motion and a second on the floor.
Well, to discuss, right? And does anyone want to move to?
No, you already gave the motion.
It was
already on the table. So that was a motion.
And they already motioned, yeah. Approved. Yeah.
You want me to say yes or no or no? Yes, no,
sure.
No.
Sure.
Motion to approve.
Okay, so then can I at the time we can get a vote on this? Would that be appropriate? So I think we can, we don't need an individual by name call, so we can just do all in favor.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Action item is approved. The next is the OCVAC meeting schedule. We have a recommendation to request that the Veterans Service Office add the Orange County Veterans Advisory Council's yearly meeting on the calendar to all agendas and to display meeting times and locations on the OCVAC webpage. So I would like to entertain this motion. Can I get a first? I'll be the first.
Okay, I'll be your second.
You'll be my second? Okay. And I think, do you want to?
Yeah, I think it's great today that we have folks here at Dana Point and San Clemente are both great in terms of places where they really take care of veterans and often on your own, because a lot of the services haven't been here, you know, issues about shop and that sort of thing. But normally these aren't very well attended meetings. This is actually a good turnout for us. And one of the things we've tried to do is to move to different locations. So next month we'll be in Seal Beach. But, you know, we can't really communicate very well with veterans, and we don't have a lot of relevance if people don't know about our meetings. And we don't have a budget, and it's not like we can do any direct advertising, but adding this to the website that already exists and talks about OCVAC seems like a no-brainer.
Yeah, I agree. And the information, I mean, at least some of it is there on the link, but I mean, everything is always trying to... Well, the goal is always to improve, you know, readability and catching your eye or something. So, yeah, I'm in favor of it as well. Anybody else have any?
No, I think it's a no-brainer. You know, we have a website. We should at least publish these OCVAC meetings. So,
just for the benefit of our attendees, because we are a county appointed, or we are a council appointed by the Board of Supervisors, we're subject to the Brown Act and all these restrictions. So it's not like we can just put whatever we want. It has to be formalized and approved. And so, you know, in our individual capacities, we can always go out and reach out, but we should always be mindful to whatever advantage that we could take by advertising things through the website, because I'm sure that gets a lot of hits. So anyway, any other discussion on the topic? Okay.
I got one on. I like it as well, because I'm with VA Rep.
I'm sorry.
We're
unable to have the public participate in board discussion. Gotcha. Yeah.
I got carried away.
I'm so sorry. Yeah.
She's a populist.
Yeah. So, I like to hear. Yes, sorry about that. So, okay. So, any other council member discussion?
Can I ask a quick question?
So no, but I'm wondering, I mean, would it be appropriate to have them fill out speaker forms and before we vote, just say their piece? Because it is an agendized item and there is a public comment, and I know that the public comment has been closed. Am I allowed to reopen it? They can quickly fill out a speaker form and then just have a minute or two to briefly...
I apologize. It's something to be asked after the meeting.
Okay. Great.
Thank you. And we can probably take a look at the order in the future.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
To allow for
maybe just kind of
exactly
because they learn and then they can comment.
That's a good idea.
And actually, really
let's look at that.
But I have a feeling I might know where Nelson is going on this. So, but definitely, and I will connect with you afterwards.
Okay. I like that idea.
Yes.
Aye.
Okay, can I get a, I guess, all in favor of this motion? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. All right, on to the executive committee report. So as Councilmember Wade says, you know, we are trying to get out into the community and use the resources that we have to spread awareness of these meetings. And at least, again, we don't have any direct authority to take action items, but we can certainly help to connect people within the county as well as raise issues to the Board of Supervisors by vote of council. So our next meeting is set for Seal Beach. I would like to propose, I'll just say we are going to shift it to 2:30 p.m. unless I hear anyone say that they can't make 2:30. And this is just because I was informed by staff that due to the travel times, traffic is bad at the end of the day. And so we want to make sure that we're not having to have them shift around the day to attend our meetings after hours or, you know, and they can't incur overtime in connection with that. So next meeting time is Seal Beach at 2:30. And I'd also, for those of you who have not volunteered your hometown or your city, if you would like to coordinate the next meeting after that, please let us know. You've got it? Okay, that's great. Because the process is, it needs to appear on the agenda.
Yes.
And so in order to do that, we need to have the meeting location locked down. There's also logistical concerns. You need to work with Monica to make sure that everything is set up so that we can have appropriate public access.
It's in July, right?
No, I think it's dark in July, right?
Yep.
The schedule's up.
August 14th.
August 14th. Mm-hmm. I have council member for it.
Yeah, August 14th, Mission Viejo.
Mission Viejo?
Yeah.
All right. Two southern cities. That's great. Okay. All right. So that is it for the executive committee report. Moving on to.
Point of information.
Yes.
I thought we were every other month.
Yes, but when we voted on the schedule of the meetings in November for the bylaws, because the county is dark in July, we skip. So that's why we're having a meeting next month, and then we kind of go. So it's not exactly every other month. I think it's actually 7 meetings a year, because we agreed to have an additional meeting.
I'm sorry, excuse me. I just wanted to let you know that the people that are presenting, they were at the Santa Ana location.
Santa Ana, that's right.
They're now on their way.
We can circle back to them if they can get here.
Agree. I mean, look, for anyone that wants to hang around for that, but did they send an ETA?
Well, they're just now leaving Santa Ana, so that would be roughly 35 minutes.
Okay.
So, yeah. So okay. They have my cell, so they can take me. My staff just let me know that they were there looking for us.
Would it be possible, this is a question for staff, do they need to be in here in person to present, or can we put them on speaker and have them go for their presentation, if assuming we get to the end of the meeting?
It's going to be a matter of the capability of putting them in. I have... Are they pulling off to logistically, right? Are they able to?
Yeah, they'll be driving down here. I don't know where they came from to get there.
I mean, if I may make a recommendation, we can absolutely. Probably, if you don't have a speaker for next month, are we able to move them for next month presentation?
I don't have anything lined up next month. Maybe we can do that and drive. I don't think the traffic's that bad, but I don't also know.
We'll take a good 35, 40 minutes right now.
Well, it's going to take at least 30 minutes
to
get down here. Okay. I have to just get a hold of them really fast and make sure she doesn't come. Sorry.
All right. Well, I think we can move on to the OC, the VSO update.
Yeah, that's me. On the table. Well, good afternoon. Thank you, everyone, for being here. I'm so sorry to hear about the presenter. One thing, in all your efforts, I want to say thank you for the consideration of moving the meetings a little bit earlier to allow for our staff to be here in support and minimize any incur in the overtime or expenses to getting here. One of the other things to consider is, as you look for future locations, if we may ask about their capabilities of like recording equipment so that way we can communicate with Monica and in good time we figure out how to make sure that we have all of that prepared for the meetings. I would like to make a great announcement if you haven't seen the newsletter yet. During our May newsletter, we did make an announcement that we are very happy and very honored to have our very own veteran service officer. He's been appointed to the training committee chair at the California Associations of Counties Veteran Services Officers. He will assist us, Eric Ensley will assist us in helping and chairing and looking at and making recommendations at the, you know, counties, VSOs at the state level and collaborating with CalVet in looking at training needs that affects, of course, right, our services deliveries and potentially look at where we can enhance upon the training needs of staff that support benefits and services to our constituents. So very happy to hear about that. Wanted to say those trainings normally take place on a quarterly basis. There are some trainings, of course, that are, as being the county veteran service officers, we are required to attend. They are sanctioned by the state. So as staff, we must attend some of those trainings. Usually they are up north. For the most part, but maybe Ben can advocate to get them down here. It'll be easier for everyone to attend. Just going to put you on the spot there. But I also, with all that said, some of our internal things that we've been working on, we continue to enhance upon our appointments and our appointment system. So very happy to see that we are triaging our appointments much easier and able to see that our wait times have definitely improved. We're able to get in there to some appointments even immediately as the next day. Always appointments that are, individuals that want to seek or need services on a walk-in basis, that's always available. We see everyone that comes in as a walk-in. Right now we have been a little bit low on our staffing efforts. So our number of actual certified claims representatives is a little bit lower than the norm that we would like, but however, we continue to see everyone that comes in and get those appointments taken care of. We did hire three additional veterans claims representative, not additional, well, recruited for some of those vacancies. They're currently actually undergoing their state required certification training so that they will be well on their way to assisting and actually be able to file and represent our veterans in their claims and benefits, application to benefits. So very proud to do that. I know that process in itself can be a little lengthy. Although we might see, let's say, the numbers in the office, not everyone there is certified to file their own claims, but we're definitely working towards those efforts and get them well on their way. So very happy to make that announcement. And of course, May is a busy month. Memorial Day is coming upon us. So I wanted to acknowledge and thank those that service our country and provided us these freedoms that we enjoy now and give time to that during that time. May is also mental health awareness. I'm sure Alana might say a couple of things there. So therefore wearing green today to represent the mental health awareness month of May. But May is also Older Americans Month. So lots of recognitions during the month of May. The OC Community Services partners with our Orange County libraries and have certain events throughout as well, the community to help engage not just older adults and also our veterans, but also other younger age generations to come out and participate and connect during the month of May. So lots of happening. As we come into knowledge of any additional events that we have not yet included in that newsletter, we'll be sure to share that with you all so that as you're out in your communities, you can bring that forth as well. So unless we have questions, that is all.
Claudia, did you color coordinate your water bottle anything?
I did not. I actually did not. I've had this for a long time and realized, oh, well, look at that. I didn't, I promise.
How many seats do you still have to fill?
For our
claims
representative, we have three more.
Three more still.
Yes, three more.
And I also just wanted to point out for the benefit of everyone in the audience, you said it, but repeating that something that I was not aware of. Go to the website, it's still like, hey, make an appointment. But actually going in there in person, they do everything they can to see you that day.
Yeah.
So anytime that you have, of course, make an appointment is great because you can have your materials together and everything else. But there are times where if a deadline is fast approaching and you can't get an appointment,
yes,
always showing up in person, the VSO absolutely makes every effort to get you. And I'm not aware of circumstances where they leave at the end of the day and leave you hanging. So you may have to wait a little bit, but it's definitely something that they can make a priority. But I will say, speaking of, so I know that we've talked about several times going on the website and just making that, you know, like in red or something, because I don't think a lot of people, I mean, I know you don't want a lot of people showing out with that, up without appointments, but I think even having a link that says, if you have a deadline, right? Because there's certain appeal deadlines that if you miss, then it starts over and you don't get the benefit of the back claims. And so just having that where it you know, almost, I don't know if it can, if you say, if there's a way to, with the scheduling software, say that there's some sort of priority deadline and it puts you in, triages you differently, or it says, hey, if you've got a deadline that expires, you know, in the next week or something like that, come in ASAP, and then prioritizing those, because that, I mean, that's a significant amount of money that can be life-changing for people if they miss that deadline. So that's all I'll point out, but I think I'm excited about the hiring. So
yeah.
I'd like to add a piece of that too, Claudia. The Advanced OC with the Orange County Equity program they have in the county just came out 2 weeks ago with the several population updates, and one of them was older vets, older adults, and they have a section on veterans. Okay. And that was put on by Advanced OC. So you might want to try to get a copy of that. It's pretty extensive. Yeah.
All right. Anything else, Harris?
No, that is all. Thank you.
Okay. Now for the CalVet link update.
Thank you, ma'am. Mm-hmm. You know, first, I want to recognize some of our guests here today. You know, Nelson, starting with you, I had a chance to visit the Marine Corps League Post in South County. There's some vibrant meetings, you know. I think I was there, Nelson. You must have had at least 60 or 70 veterans in that room, you know, a really fired up, committed group to do a lot of different things. And then, of course, our VFW post down here, constantly on the scene, you know, raising money for veterans, you know, emergency funds. I had a chance to do a brief for your service officers as well on one occasion and helping them understand some of our CalVet benefits more. You know, they're in some ways filling in South County for, you know, those veterans who, you know, may have a hard time getting up to the VSO or just another option. So a lot of good stuff happening down here. Perhaps in my hometown area too. I live in Laguna Niguel, so it was an easy run for me today. So on the CalVet end, I reported to this group over a year ago about something called the California Veterans Health Initiative. $38 million in mental health funding, it's finally arrived. And so that ground is out now. So it's pretty important timing because, as I'm sure all of you know, with there are, you know, threats to mental health funding with changes in MHSA grants and new Prop 1. And so it's a challenging time. Lena may speak about that, you know, in a minute. But hopefully this CalVet money is gonna fill the void at some level on that. And so there's an outreach component. The bulk of the money is for the services directly, and there's going to be a tracking component too. So it's good. It's great here. Sometimes government can take a little time. You know, it took some time, and there's a lot of administrative issues to get the money out there. But it's going to be divvied out in 8 regions. And so it's the 8 link regions. So, you know, my link region is Orange County. So we are a region. You know, other link regions have tons of counties, actually. So our Northern California link regions, you know, some, I think our North Valley link has at least 20 counties. And so, but mine is just Orange. So Orange County applicants will just be from Orange County. So that's really good news. I wanted to make some comments.
Question.
Yeah.
Who's going to apply for that?
I haven't seen any restrictions. The grant itself is pretty open-ended. I mean, it's about providing mental health services and access to mental health mm-hmm. services. So I haven't seen any clear delineation of groups that would not be eligible to apply. I even talked to a gentleman yesterday on the phone who just started an equine therapy program. Mm-hmm. I told him I wasn't sure if that'd be the kind of thing that'd be approved, but I saw nothing in the application that would say no. So I think it's
offline. Let's talk. I like to check it. Yeah,
for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
And where do you apply for this?
So it's you know, if you put California Veterans Health Initiative grant into Google, it just pops right up. And it's on a state grant site. You can link through it for CalVet. It's the first couple hits just pop right up there, actually. Just a little bit about housing, too. The Housing Committee of the Collaborative has had a couple of meetings recently, and some stuff that I learned is very interesting. So it was part of Prop 1. I couldn't even believe this when I saw it, that there's actually $1 billion of new funding for veteran housing. It's a staggering number, and that's great. But I had a chance, and if any of you have met Melanie Martins, but she's a senior VA housing social worker, been around a long time, and in this meeting, she was reporting on the county's by name list. You know, so there's a tracking mechanism called the by name list that actually every single known homeless veteran in the county is on this list. And so multiple service providers get together to talk about how to help them. And she actually reported that at least 60, and I think she was trying to be conservative, and it could be closer to 100, chronically homeless veterans on that list have been offered housing and declined it. And so I'm seeing some nods that, you know, you guys are seeing this. I had known of that. I didn't know the numbers were quite that big. It's a pretty big number on that list. And so the reasons given were things like the units were studios, did not like the location. Other things too, like not having pets, certainly substance issues were complaints. But it was just a fascinating report to hear the numbers are that big. And it kind of made me realize in this environment where there's all this new money to build housing, we better make sure that we're talking to veterans about how to build this housing so they're going to use it. If the idea, which is certainly part of the state's vision, is we're going to help, you know, get veterans and other homeless people off of our streets and into the housing they deserve. So it's an interesting dynamic to a complicated problem, right? And so, yeah, and then...
you said before you move on, how many homeless veterans are on the list?
Yeah, I think it was about 150, 180. Something in there. Yeah. And she was trying to be conservative. She later acknowledged that she thought it was closer to 100 have been offered over time. It was 60, I think, just in this recent count.
That number doesn't include offers of congregate shelter. Those are permanent housing.
That's exactly
that they
right.
rejected.
That was, I asked her that exact question, Stephanie, and it was either a tenant-based HUD-VASH voucher or a project-based. So if those terms aren't familiar to you, so HUD-VASH, right? VASH is the veteran specific version of HUD Section 8 housing, and it comes in two forms. So tenant based gives you a voucher you can go to a regular rental unit, okay, and get an apartment or something like that. Project based refers to VASH vouchers that are used in permanent supportive housing. So a big housing complex. So Veterans Village, right, has 75 in Placentia, right? So there's like 125 units right there of this project based VASH housing. Yeah, and that's right. She told me it's either one on that list.
For the studio, is it because there are multiple people in one, or is it just?
No, I think it's single units. I was so surprised to hear that, but it was too small.
Yeah.
Why? But that's when we started getting into strategy. Well, okay, what are the reasons? You know, I think the pets was a big one that came out. So we're talking about strategy that I think there was a unit that was Penny Lambright is the head of an organization called Patriots in Pause. Mm-hmm. And she identified an abandoned complex near her center that she wants to take over to provide literal care for the animals of homeless veterans that are not going to get medical care. You know, and so there's some people actually trying to, actually, I think going to, this one is great. I didn't make the link on this before, but I think some folks want to talk to Supervisor Foley about this. And I could follow up on this issue and just kind of get the update. If this is
the site she's identified, is it?
Yeah, if this is something that OCVA would want to support, you know, obviously we'd want to have documented need. Right, that this is a sufficient enough problem to justify a facility, but it sounds like people do believe it is. I just can't say that I personally have the data myself about it, but there are people, good people, that think it is an issue.
Well, would it be a center just like a shelter essentially for that they can leave and come like check out their dogs, or but is it a housing complex that is dog friendly?
No, it'd be the first.
Okay.
Yeah, it'd be a place for.
Because I know I volunteer at the San Clemente Dana Point Animal Shelter, and you know, we frequently have where if someone is you know, homeless and they need assistance, like the shelter will care for the dogs will get walked, they'll get fed. okay. whatever pending right. issues. So maybe I bet some of the, I don't know if other shelters do it. I bet Mission Viejo does. I think they do that as well. But I'm wondering if we can get data or if she can get data on that.
Yeah, right. Maybe there's more available on it than people realize.
Well, not even more availability, but just to show the need. Oh, the need. Right? Like homeless people. Because right. I know that there are far more people that contact the shelter looking for assistance probably than... you know, qualify or end up taking advantage of it. Okay. But I know at least in San Clemente, Dana Point, it's not an insignificant number given the number of unhoused people.
Well, that's great.
I have a question. I mean, and you may not know, Ben, but I've wondered for a long time why project-based housing, where you're giving people their own space, why they're so resistant. And it's the same thing with the Calvet Veterans Homes. None of them allow pets. And I mean, we all understand that a lot of vets have service animals. And just because a doctor didn't call it a service animal, like that's an important thing. Like you don't want a studio. I don't have a lot of sympathy for that, but you don't want to give up your pet. I understand that's family. So that's why is that?
You know, I mean, why is that the veteran experience? Or why is that the policy? That's
why question. Is that the policy right. on all these project-based?
I don't know. And I think it makes no sense. And maybe this is an advocacy point that, look, if there's $1 billion coming down the pike, you know, allocate at least some of it to create one facility that can have pets.
Yeah. Do we have any doctors working or any organizations working? Because I think what Councilman Ray pointed out, they are emotional therapy pets. They're trained or registered or whatever. But I wonder if there's any type of organization or medical professionals group that would help either evaluate and determine that these are indeed, you know, emotional support animals. So whatever paperwork is needed. I know that the process to become an official service dog is much more, but that even could be a, you know, a policy, a special recognized category of emotional support animals that would then be permitted into those type of homes, assuming they could get checked out by whatever program or meet certain criteria.
Great. Yeah. It sounds like if the council would like, I will, you know, offer to gather a little more data before the next meeting on the question, and I could report back on it briefly.
Because, and I know that there are a lot of animal rescue organizations, including the Pet Project Foundation and Dana Point San Clemente, that offer like low cost or it to certain people that qualify, homeless, including, you know, taking like the vaccine, spay neuter, and things like that for their animals. But I mean, if that's what's keeping people, and I mean, I'm a crazy rabbit lady, so I understand that you make decisions that other people might look at as unreasonable, but they really are your family. And if it's preventing veterans from, you know, taking advantage of housing opportunities, I think it's certainly worth looking into. And I'm wondering if that's, you know, something that, I mean, you said that you reach out individually, work on that, or if it makes sense to appoint some type of ad hoc committee.
At least to look into it.
Sure.
Or would you like an opportunity to come back and maybe form the ad hoc at the next meeting?
Whatever you think. I mean, I think it'd also be worth collaborating with the housing committee, the collaborative that's looking at it also.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at it jointly. And, you know, maybe it's just possible that this issue is just kind of more of a micro level issue in local communities that's being identified and it's not getting up there to the point of, you know, getting the housing built with it permitted in front, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to proceed, but, you know, certainly I think getting some, the info, the committee, Melanie Martins and some other folks there would be able to provide some information.
Do we have interest in the council for an ad hoc committee? Because I can certainly appoint one. Yes, would you like to take the lead on that?
Sure.
Okay. Do I have
another victim?
Yes. Anyone else who would like to be on that?
I'll be a victim with you.
All right.
Sorry, just to clarify, Stephanie would be chair then?
Correct.
Okay.
Lead victim.
And then John
it'll be a reign of terror.
Reign of terror. I look forward to it.
He'll be the lead victim. Yeah.
Reigning.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you both for volunteering for that.
You'd be a supplemental victim.
Yes. Assistant
victim. No, wonderful. Okay. OC Corvettes.
Well, just to speak on the housing issue and the reasons why people don't accept housing. There's a whole mental health component to that as well. Sometimes they don't take the housing. They'll say it's because of it's a studio or it's a single. Now the pet thing, now that's a real thing. they will not go without their pets, and that's a thing. But more than that, those who are chronically homeless, they actually are not necessarily comfortable moving into an apartment. It seems like a strange thing, but I have seen it. I've placed people in supportive housing, and they do things like
sleep on the floor,
mm-hmm. move the mattress into the living room, sleep mm-hmm. there. What's needed, and I think you alluded to this, and something that is also near and dear to my heart that I'm not sure Prop 1 is going to address, is that more than just the housing, they need the support part of the supportive housing, because when they have the supportive housing, they have people who go in there who understand the mental health component of why people may be struggling in their new housing, to be able to help them stay in their housing, because believe it or not, they don't remember to pay their rent. They give all their money to their friends. They don't remember, or they don't think about they're going to get evicted if they have all their friends come over. I mean, people continue to use substances. They struggle in housing. So this is a large part of how people don't accept the housing, or they get the housing and they leave it. So like those of us maybe who have ever been in that situation, I can't imagine what that would be like. I'd be happier than anything to like not be on the street. But for them, it's complicated. And as far as that emotional support letter, there's parameters to write that letter. I can write that letter, but we have to have some sort of established relationship. And I don't know if it's a matter of someone just going to any random person to be able to get them to sign off on that letter, but to have, it doesn't even have to be that long of a relationship, but a provider, it could be a social worker, it could be their therapist, their doctor, somebody who they have an established mental health, medical relationship with that can write the supportive emotional support animal letter. And we have done that in our clinic in support of people being able to have their animal, their pet live with them. And that's how
it feels like a much easier lift than trying to build a building permitting and everything goes along with that. Mm-hmm. Like that seems like an avenue that we could help assist with, is just guiding people through that process.
Now, granted, if there were a person who was out there that would be willing to write that letter, you know, without having an established relationship, that's fine, because then they would be able to help with that. But that's the guidelines that I understand from my
we're certainly not suggesting that there should be a pod or anything that. I think what we were more thinking was, hey, that could be incentive for people that might not want to get care or mental health treatment. But if you advertise that, and it's like, oh, you've got to see, you know, have a few appointments, have a relationship, get evaluated, make sure the animal is checked out. And
coming from the perspective of a treatment provider, if I had someone come to my services, I would like to think that they would like to receive the services. Like if they came to me, it's because they needed me, even if they think they don't. And it's kind of disheartening when they come and they say, just sign this letter. And that's why the reason for the established relationship.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's just my two cents on the topic. But yeah, it is a complicated situation with the homeless situation, and I think it's great that there's money for housing, but unfortunately when you pull from one pot, it takes from another, and that's something that our agency, the healthcare agency, is needing to take a very strong look at over the next few years on how we're going to be serving people.
Just because you build it doesn't mean they'll come.
But I mean, like, somebody put this together, so I'm trying to look at this positively, even though I know how it affects services, possibly adversely. I'm hoping that this whatever vision they have for the way they rearrange the money is helpful. I just see that some things are going to be missing. But healthcare agency, we've already been taking a look at that, even when just the idea came up. Even before we even thought it might pass, we've been working on it, our administration has, so that we can be successful in serving all the people, even with less funding. So that's my two cents on the housing. And then And it's like everybody already helped me build my topics. So like Claudia said, it is May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's a big deal for healthcare agency. We do have a lot of activities and events going around in the county, too numerous for me to think about and talk about. But if you go to our website, and we also have OC Navigator, if you just type in OC Navigator, that is our resource site that you can type in for events, and they have things listed on there for mental health resources, not just mental health resources, all different kind of resources. They also have free self-help care, like videos, activities, things on there for adults, for kids, a lot of stuff for kids, so teens. It's a good tool, I guess. It can be an app also on your phone too. If you go to any events that healthcare agency has a table at, we always have a QR code to be able to just scan it. We actually have one specifically for veteran services. It's on the site, but our QR code goes straight to veteran resources from the card. I didn't think that I would need them, so I didn't bring them. I can bring them next time. But yeah, so OC Navigator, it can talk about all the different events that are going on in May for Mental Health Awareness Month. I know in the county, we do internal events to be sure that we keep people aware of mental health and to reduce stigma. That's the biggest thing, is for us to reduce stigma of mental health and to be aware. In other news, my OC for Vets program, we hired finally our final clinician. So he's getting on board. So we will be able to serve more veterans. So that's very exciting. We are still missing an office support staff, which is sad, but at least I got my clinician. So my clinical staff are fully staffed. We continue to work together with our working wardrobes, peer navigator staff. They're still working on fully staffing their team, but we're up and running. The numbers are good. We continue to collaborate with the VSO, referring back and forth. It's a very good partnership. And our big event that OC for Vets Healthcare Agency and the OC Navigator is sponsoring this month is Country Night at the Angel Stadium. So that is going to be a night where veterans and military personnel are honored. So for those who are service providers, our contracted, our OC for Vets and our contracted agencies, we will be giving out tickets for our participants, those who may not otherwise be able to afford going to a game like that, so that they can be honored. So for them and their families. And then just to let Claudia know, I have talked to Eric, and I will be giving a set over to the VSO so that when you have your clients come in, they can also participate and get tickets. Yeah. So that's the biggest exciting news that we have for May.
And what night is that?
Yeah. That would be helpful. That's May 25th. And if I had flyers, I would put them out. But strangely enough, there's no flyers.
And you remember the start time for that?
The game starts at 6:38. Yeah. The concert is directly after. People will be able to watch from the stands. However, those people that we serve in our programs, they're going to have an opportunity to be able to go down to the field. The first 100 will get like a bracelet. They're going to be checking in at our table that will be on the second floor. There's Angel Stadium. There's this Yakult, like the yogurt, that liquid yogurt stuff. They sell it at this one stand. And where we are is right next to that. So if you have an opportunity to come to the game, that's where our table will be, and I will be right there helping to check people in and be sure people get information about our services. So recently we have tabled a couple of big events. most recently month of military child that was put on by Child Guidance Center. And Ben, I know you were there. We were able to give resources out to, I think they, I don't know if you remember the numbers, I think it's somewhere around 300 people. So one of the things that we do at our table is promote mental wellness, obviously, but also talk about suicide prevention. Like, we straight up talk about it right there, and people are kind of weird about it, but we are just, it's a thing. And we provide the gun locks at our tables, and between two different events, because people kind of look at it kind of funny, but then there's other people that are like, yes, yes. I was able to talk to plenty of people, and we were able to give out like 50 gun locks in two events. So that made me really happy. I had one woman approach me who told me that she had a friend whose husband actually attempted. He's also a veteran. Fortunately, for her own family and also for that family. And I said, please be sure you take the literature. Yes. Inside the gun locks is also literature on suicide prevention. So I'm sure to point that out. But that is, as long as we're talking about Mental Health Awareness Month, suicide prevention is huge. And we are promoting that. We provide the gun locks. I just have to say this is near and dear to my heart this month, just because, unfortunately, despite doing this, I had an in-laws family member actually by firearm completed a suicide. So so I'm just voicing that very loud this month. So yeah. And I am part of the firearm work group that Eric is also a part of. So so I am doing my part to try to get that the word out there. And that's all I have, not to end on a bummer note. Let's see, but yes, a lot of good things going on as far as mental health awareness and healthcare agency this month.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions?
I was going to ask Alana, yes, if you are able to obtain any flyers on any of the events that we may not already have, just
yes,
even if we do, send it to us, that way we can share it.
Yes,
and pass it along.
Yes, okay, definitely. Yeah, this, I don't know why we don't have a flyer on the end.
Probably somewhere out there making its way through.
My flyer is basically, I took a picture when I was at the Angel game of the sign that said OC for Vets and OC Navigator sponsoring. And I took a picture of it. I sent it to somebody. I said, hey, so we're sponsoring the event. Yay.
They're advertising a lot on the baseball game.
Yes.
Those that can watch the game all the way through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I see on the Ducks helmets too.
Oh, really? OC Navigator. Yes. Yes. We are also involved with the Ducks, but right now happens to be Angels.
Yeah.
So, but
they're advertising a lot.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, let's move to the committee portion of the agenda. Okay, the first report is a communication standing committee report.
No report.
Okay. Did we want to talk about adding someone else?
Yeah, my current business has got me 3 weeks out of the month on the East Coast. And I wanted to resign as the communications committee chair, give that to someone who can put more time into it. And again, I'll function in ad hoc committee roles and that stuff, but I just like to be able to see if anybody be interested in doing that. Guess not.
Well, and I was going to say, we have some council members who are not here this month, and maybe can you hold on for one more month for us?
I will. I'll do it one more month.
All right, appreciate it. And then we can adjust this next month.
Okay.
The next report for the Events Outreach Standing Committee report for Councilmember Michael Redigan.
So I wasn't able to attend the last meeting, so I wanted to revisit a couple items on it. I did have a chance to at least listen to the recording and understand what was discussed there. However, one of the, it might even have been you that was far enough away from the mic that nothing was heard on the recording. So something to keep in mind and the importance of what you said earlier, having the right equipment to record the event.
That was brilliant.
for opportunities for amplifying different events out there. We heard from the legal side on what we can and can't do on that particular portion there, but the things that are within the realm I included here in the report. So we've got the Big Voice newsletter that we can send things up as long as we have them in a timely manner, and they can choose to put those in the Big Voice newsletter. You're never discouraged from including on your own social media that this is an event and it's available. So you're welcome to do that on your personal social media. Just, hey, I want other veterans to be aware of this. So that's okay to do. We can amplify it up to the Board of Supervisors. So we can draft a memo from this council here or committee and send it up and make them aware of what's available in their district so that they could attend if they so choose. We've gone down the OCFAC route or OCFAC route. And so that's something that we could continue to explore if we want to. Website events page, there's a process for that now. Again, it's getting the information up there in a timely manner. And then lastly, just recording within the minutes. So from this, my recommendation basically is I think the Big Voice newsletter is probably one of the easier lifts to push that information. It can be reformatted into a memo up to Board of Supervisors to give them awareness. And then recorded in the minutes is an easy way as well to do those. So as far as those options that are out there, those are my recommendations, but certainly open to other folks and suggestions. Pause there for discussion.
I like the idea of the Big Voice newsletter, assuming that everyone is on board on your end with this.
Yeah, we can always share. We do already. And of course, our look is what events are those in terms of in order to abide by any county policy to avoid any kind of conflict or any issue where it appeared that you're providing favoritism for any particular entity, for example. But we do look at all and every event that we can share and blast. The webpage, excellent point. We are working internally with our communications team so that we can provide some of the updates that you have already as advisory council make recommendations to your own page, but also in general to the page of the VSO so that we can add some of the events, including also amping up our social media so that we can post. And even though, let's say, these are events hosted by other entities in terms of like county agencies and or community organizations that are serving veterans, where we can repost, we are looking at that as well so that we're not like always reinventing the wheel, right? We can take someone and say, hey, it came to us, you want to get this out, so we can repost that a lot quicker than having to create something from the very beginning. So we are looking at all of those efforts, which is in support of some of your recommendations. Yeah, that you see here.
Yeah, outside of a a government agency, what's the profile of an entity that's acceptable? I mean, we've talked about making sure that we are not promoting, but what is that entity? Would that be like a VFW or American Legion organization?
So I think part of it too has to include access. So it needs to be free, it needs to be public. And if you can find events that are maybe already being endorsed by a Board of Supervisors, that's an easy lift to say.
That's an easy lift.
Right.
That's easy. So that's why getting the memo out to the Board of Supervisors as well kind of helps keep the wheel turning. If you get that into a timely manner, they do announce that they're supporting that particular event. It's much easier for them to put it into the newsletter and things like that. So that's why I recommended both of those.
Okay.
But my understanding was 15 business days prior, we need to get that up to be included in there. So that looks like really kind of the first week of the month. Yeah. You need to know about the event, get it submitted, so they got time to review it and edit it and consider it. And then it gets published on the 30th of each month. They're supposed to, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Correct.
Okay, thank you. Moving on to the VSO ad hoc committee report. Councilmember Duane is not here, neither is Councilmember Vargas, who got activated, which is why he's not at today's meeting, but he will be at the next one, which it's going to be like a day before or day after his retirement. So you shouldn't miss any more for activation. So that's good. He sent, I think, this packet, which is helpful. Did he connect with you or with Eric individually about some of these questions? I'm thinking it might make
not
sense.
Not yet. We thought that he would want,
Yeah. Let's move this to the next if that's all right with you. Yeah. We'll give you guys more time to talk about it before we try to put you on the spot.
Yeah, no, I think
a lot of great information here, and definitely things that we can confirm and or, you know, give any like clarifications on some of those trends.
Exactly.
So he presented it to us, but we have not had a chance to connect to provide comment before. So I assume that he wanted to at least pose some of those questions.
I did. And he has in the
I saw
the packet. Yep. And so, but we just wanted to make sure that you had it, but I don't think we're in a position now without some of the data to understand it. So, because as we know, when you get data, unless you have a complete picture, it's not really helpful. So, so we'll go ahead and table that then, the rest of the report, especially because neither one of them here. I'm wondering if we have presentation. Is that what we have? So we've got council comments. I know you need to go at some point. How much time can you give us? And if he leaves, are we allowed to continue? I know we have to have quorum.
Yeah, you have already established quorum. So if you're just now at the point of providing your comments, you can.
Okay.
You are free to go.
Well, then I think it makes sense for us to move next to council comments. You can make that way. We can make our comments and then finish up with the presentation. Is that okay for everyone? Okay. So with that, we'll move on to council comments. We can start with you and then go clockwise on the table.
Okay. Just a couple quick things. You should have received, let me ask this question. Have you all received a copy from Valor in regards to the cemetery, the veteran cemetery?
No.
Obviously not. Okay, so what I will do is when I get there is a video that has come out, it's 4 minutes long, that talks about the veteran cemetery and the county cemetery. I will make sure we get that to you. Okay. In fact, I've got to make a presentation on it later on today, so that's why I got to leave. But I'll make sure you get it. It's very, very well done. It was put together by the county cemetery district, and it pretty much lays it out really, really nice.
Is this the cemetery update you're talking
about? That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Yes, ma'am. Just for some of the things that I've got going, the Memorial Day, I'm kicking off a brand new Memorial Day program on the 17th of May with Kaiser Permanente. They have a group called KP Vets, and they got in touch with me. And so the Anaheim, KP, I kind of started laughing. Lieutenant Colonel from the Air Force started talking about it, and I started laughing. KP. Yeah, right. Anyway, so Kitchen Patrol. But anyway, they've got 175 vets in there in that hospital over there, so they're going to kick off and do a first ever Memorial Day program in their little courtyard at 10 o'clock on the 17th of May. And then my usual Newport Harbor High School on the 24th, and then I'll do the Anaheim VFW American Legion one on the 27th. So, and then the other little thing is that we're looking forward to, we had a, you know, just keeping in touch and making sure it happens and staying in that older veteran stuff, right?
Yeah. Okay. I'm right there with you, David.
Yeah, I know.
I'm surprised you didn't fight back.
That report is really, really neat because I got the chance to be with Advance OC, and they allowed me to put 5 or 6 veterans questions that went out to the public on a survey. So they were pretty happy about us doing that. And then for the good of the order, I'd like to recognize Mr. William Baines down there in the corner, who's a past chair emeritus of this group when he first got started. So welcome, sir. But anyway, having said all that, I'm out of here. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
It'll be quick. No comments.
Nope. Nothing? All right. Yeah.
Is there any type of a memo template for Board of Supervisors if we were to draft something?
Can help with that.
Okay.
Yeah, if you draft like the language that you want to include, then we can look at the memo format.
Okay, and then just routing process, do you want it to come back through the room or do you want
so it would come right
so
as
what
an
you would
action?
Do is,
yeah,
I think you would work with county staff on that in your subcommittee, and then it would be placed on the agenda because we have to be mindful that we're not circulating things with a majority of us. And so you would work with them, then you would ask them to place it on the agenda, and we could discuss it at the agenda and vote on it. Okay.
I already mentioned SJR6. I hope when we meet on the 12th, I'll have some more to report on that. They're trying to move on it in June. The only other thing I wanted to bring up was that I had an interesting experience getting my fishing license as a disabled veteran. And you can't blame CalVet at all, but I have this idea. So every state agency that offers some kind of benefit to veterans has its own unique and individual way that you accreditate or you provide your discharge status and your disability status. And they're all different. You know, I have this portal, request a secure download link, whatever it is, you know. And I'm just wondering from the CalVet perspective, and I'm wondering who amongst my fellow veterans has been frustrated in dealing with DMV, dealing with county parks or state parks rather, get parks passed. It's very, the intent is to do a good thing for veterans and it drives you nuts. These are great benefits once you get them, but the access is terrible. So my thought is, why can't CalVet maintain a database that all the other state agencies could have access to so that, you know, when you go to your VSO service office, your county VSO, and you file your initial claim, they say, hey, you're going to qualify for these benefits, you know, sign this, and we'll give your information to the state of California. And anytime you apply now for a veteran's benefit, it's already on record with CalVet, and that agency just goes to them to check that it's true.
That's an outstanding idea. I mean, the other one on the list is the property tax exemption for 100%. You got to deal with the county property tax assessor's office. It's a big list, you know, and so it's just a question of, you know, I mean, capacity at some level, and I think it's a wonderful idea, and kind of question, I guess, how to go about it.
Well, what happens is a person like me gets frustrated, just doesn't do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I'm probably the majority.
What was the roadblock you encountered getting your fishery license?
So I did eventually get it, but what happened was I went to apply and they said, you know, email this address to request a secure download so we can send your materials. Now, the other options were I could have mailed it or I could have faxed it. Mm-hmm. That they never replied with the secure download message. And so then the next thing I did is I just got into my account with Fish and Wildlife and I downloaded it there, thinking maybe that's old information and you don't need the secure download. I have an account with them. The account is verified. Here's a PDF of those documents. And then I received a bunch of messages and then they sold it to me. Great, problem solved. No. Then I got a series of emails. Well, this isn't valid. And so then I finally faxed it to them and it was valid. I mean, it's just, and they, like, I think that would help the state because, you know, they don't have the expertise, you know, to understand this, and it's duplicative for each agency to collect paperwork on individual veterans for one benefit. Why not have a clearinghouse?
It's conceivable if the County Veteran Service Offices could play a big role in this too. I mean, if you look at the veteran driver's license designation, exactly, and the vehicle registration waiver. I tell you, would not believe how many phone calls I get on the vehicle registration waiver and disabled plates benefit for 100% veterans with mobility connection all the time. It's called, you need DMV form 256A, sometimes DMV form 256, and then you have to either go to a VSO or a doctor and get it completed. And so, and oftentimes the problem also comes when someone goes to the DMV because it's a lot for DMV field officers to manage too. I mean, think about it. They got so much stuff. It's confusing for anyone. So yeah. And there's, I hear you, you know, and it's kind of a question of, you know, how to maybe make it better. Yeah.
Stephanie, was one of the documents that you were asked for to show the proof, does that include a veteran status on the DMV, on the ID or in driver's
license? No, I mean, basically.
Did they actually want like discharge?
No, they usually what veterans supply, and you could provide your DD-214, right. But especially if they need to know your disability rating. So for this, they needed my disability rating. So then you have a standard letter that you get from the VA that doesn't, and it protects your privacy. It doesn't say what the disabilities are. It just says you're rated at and you're honorably discharged. So it covers that covers it.
Interesting for a fishing license.
Well,
I mean,
$65. To pay for the sport fishing license.
Yeah.
$9 with the disabled veterans program. So it's a great benefit.
Yeah.
But like you sort of go nuts trying to get it. Did you have the same problem, Mike?
No, I think what I've seen a lot of commercial companies use recently is ID.me. Mm-hmm. And yeah. That mm-hmm. kind of handles that from having to constantly send in paperwork to individual companies. They're like, hey, just log in. So if that is a resource that people want to invest in, but I'm sure there's always a cost to utilize that API.
All right, thanks. My council comments, I actually got my opportunity to use my driver's license, my veteran ID, when I was in Vegas this last weekend, and I am not going to divulge where or how, but I got a discount, and it was wonderful. So, you know, I make light of that, but I think it really does show how absolutely useful it is. And I think especially if you're a woman veteran, most people don't believe that you're a veteran and don't. And then when you get out, you have no other identification showing that unless you have like a VFW card or something. So so I was really proud to use that. Okay. I do want to thank VFW Post 9934 for showing up today. I mean, they're well known in Orange County for their amazing contributions to veterans. And I think really what sets them apart is they've got an office here at City Hall, and they're a service-based organization. And anytime you're at an event in Dana Point, you see them out there selling water and popcorn and really, you know, raising money. Mm-hmm. And anytime there's a homeless veteran in Dana Point, they're the ones who get the call, and they've just done tremendous work. Also, the South Coast Detachment 22 of the Marine Corps League, which you've met today, Commandant Nelson Colburn. I mean, they do a lot, not only to help active duty Marines, but also Marine veterans, and just a really, really great community. Yesterday, I attended a groundbreaking at the Irvine Cultural Terrace and attended the open house at the hangar. So the Flying Leatherneck Historical Foundation had a H1 Whiskey Cobra parked out front, which I don't know, how much time do you have in that?
A couple hundred hours.
I've got like five. But anyway, I was giving tours of that, and that's awesome. So they are the Flying Leatherneck Historical Foundation is trying to bring the Flying Leatherneck Aviation Museum from MCAS Miramar, because the Marine Corps doesn't want to maintain it anymore. And they're bringing it up to Great Park at one of the old El Toro hangars that used to belong to the Raiders. And so it's just, it's a really, really cool opportunity to get out and meet people within the community. We also had veterans that were there that got to fly, you know, crawl around the Cobra, and active duty Marines actually, and kids as well. So the start date or opening date, I should say, of the museum is expected in the fall of next year. And we're in the process of moving 22 aircraft out there. So it's just going to be a really, really great, I said 22, it's over 30 planes, actually. And the Cobra that we had yesterday had its engines, its sensors, its everything. I mean, it was in really, really good shape. And the museum is going to be designed to be interactive, so you can have members of the community and veterans come in and really learn about marine aviation. So I wanted to plug that. And then also I wanted to thank Councilmember Wade for her tireless work on LGBTQ issues. I just think it's amazing that Orange, you know, that you personally, but also Orange County is being recognized for our advocacy for veterans that have been really maligned and underserved for many, many decades. So you're doing amazing work, and I'm really proud to serve with you on this council. All right, so moving on, sorry, my last is a huge apology to our presenters today who drove the exact opposite way, I'm assuming, to present, and they're presenting on an important issue. So with that, would you like to come up and we can finish out our meeting today with the presentation, Protect Yourself, Family and Friends from the Grips of the Fentanyl Crisis.
Perfect. Thank
Shane,
you so much.
Is it you?
Yes, Shane Wood. Shane Wood. Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. So my name is Shane Wood. I am the executive director of fentanylsolution.org. It's an Orange County-based nonprofit that is working on opioid awareness and education and advocacy, as well as specifically the fentanyl crisis in particular. So we've been in the community for a little over a year now. We've had some really incredible presentations, and very early on in the work, one of the things that we really saw was the need to start to specialize and look at specific demographics that are being affected in different ways and have different needs. And actually, the second person ever hired into the organization, Christina was, I'll let her introduce herself, but as a veteran herself, she is very passionate about this work. So we wanted to come down and start to introduce ourselves and the new program that we're going to be working on specifically with the veteran population. So if you want to just give a couple words and then we'll jump into the training.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Christina, and I am a Marine Corps veteran.
Thank you.
I was on Camp Pendleton for 5 years, and now I'm dedicated to work with veteran programs and organizations, especially in this space, just because it has hit the veteran community so heavily. Thank you.
Perfect. So, respect.
Thank you for letting us be here.
Thank you so much. So I want to respect your time. I understand that you've been through so much already. That was such an incredibly robust agenda that you had. So what I like to do when I start these trainings is really start at the ground level, because I find that that is the best place to really know how we can have these conversations as quickly and effectively as possible. Because at the end of the day, saving a life is surprisingly simple in its abilities. So when I say naloxone, who knows what that term is? Who knows what that? Okay, great. So about half of you. That's fantastic. So we do a lot of these trainings, and often it's one or two individuals. Sometimes it helps if I say, okay, naloxone isn't necessarily a term that you're familiar with, but who has heard of Narcan? Narcan's the one people, Narcan, right? That's the one we go to. So that's one of the first hurdles, really, in Orange County to come to sort of get over is just a simple understanding of terminology. So Narcan is something that individuals understand. And when we began our work going into the community, we wanted to be as responsible as possible. And naloxone is actually the name of the chemical compound that creates Narcan. So Narcan is sort of the brand name. I don't know that they would love that I would say this, but I feel like it's sort of becoming the Kleenex of universal drugs. They would not have used it. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes those things kind of get away from you. And so the idea is understanding that. But for now, naloxone is the chemical. Narcan is one name brand. Orange County in particular, the reason I even bring this up, sometimes people say, why are we even worried about this? Orange County in particular is contracted with a brand name called Kloxxado. Same chemical compound, but that name will sometimes throw community members off. So when we're tabling at an event, when we're having a training, individuals will get concerned. They are there because they want to protect their families. They want to do what's right. And the term that they know is Narcan. So let's say, I don't want that. I don't want Kloxxado. I'm here for Narcan. So helping to understand if you're at an event and somebody is trying to get any opioid reversal medication, you can say, oh, I had a presentation. They're the same thing, just different brand names. So when I say the same thing, and that's another place where, if the CEOs were in the room, they'd probably chastise me because they're not exactly the same. The difference comes down to dosages. Narcan is the industry standard. It's been around since the 80s. First responders have been using it for quite some time. It was the first that was available to the public. They created the nasal spray that we use now. It used to be an injection. I'm really glad we don't have to walk around with vials and needles anymore. We have these super easy to use nasal sprays, and we can go from there. But they created the industry standard, which is a 4 milligram dose. One of the bottles, I will open up a box. One of the applicators in here for Narcan has 4 milligrams of the opioid reversal drug in it. Okay. Kloxxado came along and said, more is better. So if you see a bright orange, looks exactly the same, same shape and everything. But if you see one that's bright orange, that's going to be your Kloxxado. It's 8 milligrams per dosage. Now, the reason I bring that up, again, it's information. People say, oh, so there are two doses in each Kloxxado. No. Each of these, no matter what brand you get, more are coming along all the time, they are all one use. You press this button one time, that's business. It squirts, it's done. So if you use Narcan, that's 4 milligrams directly into your nasal passages that get into your bloodstream. If you use Kloxxado, one spray, two doses, 8 milligrams go in there, okay?
So it's all absorbed through the mucosal lining.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So
you don't have to breathe it in.
Any place where any place where you can absorb like nutrients or chemicals. Okay. You could also, it's not as ideal, but through the gums as well, but this is an intranasal one. Yep. So specifically going into the mucous membranes.
Yep.
So that's part of the reason that we say that. As community leaders, you often are going to be the ones who have some of that nuanced information that can really help somebody understand that they want to do the right thing, and that right thing is getting whatever is available to them to protect their families. Okay, so a couple of stats that we need to know about. On average right now, 300 people per day are dying in the United States from opioid-related overdose. Of those, if you break it down, the reason that we specifically focus on fentanyl is that 250 of those 300 are fentanyl-related in particular. So not breaking that down sort of gives us a skewed understanding of what it is that's actually happening. Now, why is that important? Specifically in the veterans community, we have seen a doubling in the number of opioid-related overdoses and deaths in the last 3 years. We've seen it double, right? It's come up 94% in the last 10 years, specifically in the veterans population. 82% of those reported, again, I loved what you said earlier about you need to have all of the data and you need to be able to get a picture of it or else it doesn't mean anything. This is all based on people who report, right, that had an intervention and were able to be put into the system to talk about it. So as all of you know in your work, if this is the amount that's reported, the number that are actually happening, probably much higher, but 82% of veterans who were treated for opioid overdose had fentanyl in their system. That was part of the adulteration that was happening. So the number one choice of opioid misuse currently among the veteran population is often oxycodone. We can understand why. You're prescribed it, things happen, you try to continue to mitigate those physical ailments, you get it from other places, it's adulterated, fentanyl is the one that gets it. So 82% of the time, you are getting fentanyl without ever having intended on it. 75% of fentanyl deaths were from unintended ingestion. People believe that they're taking OxyContin, oxycodone, hydrocodone, even some of the big bads, your heroines, your methamphetamines, any of those things are being laced with fentanyl. So 75% accidental ingestion, okay? So this is a huge issue and it only continues to grow. Now, I would love to have an hour and a half to talk with all of you, get all that. That's sort of the background information, but what does that really mean practically? What that means is when you are doing the work that you're doing, the federal government currently has said, if you see somebody who becomes non-responsive, you're in a committee meeting, somebody keels over, right? They're non-responsive. Your job is not to try to determine what has happened to them. People often say, well, what if it's a cardiac event, right? What if there was a stroke? What if they are just exhausted? Any number of things. Your job is not to diagnose. Your job is to react. So what we look at is if somebody, whether it's here, coffee shop, what have you, is non-responsive, first thing you want to do is obviously check on them. We're going to go with the most basic scenario, because there's a lot of ways in which things happen. I'm standing here, I have this conversation with you, you see me start to nod over, and boom, I hit the floor. Hopefully one of you, probably Christina, because she knows me, is gonna say, Shane, are you okay? No response. So we elevate. What's the next thing? Grab a shoulder, right? Shake them. We have to think about the ways in which experiences can also make a difference. If somebody is not used to being touched, if somebody is not, we have to think about how to protect ourselves as well. But the next thing you have to do is some kind of contact to try to get a reaction from them to see if they're responsive. Still no response comes from that. Final piece of the intervention that you're looking for is a sternum rub. Probably most of you know what that looks like. Take your middle finger. You can choose either hand. I usually use my non-dominant for whatever reason when I'm doing the demonstration, and just stick it right at the breastbone. Kind of press on there for me. If you've never done it before, just take a moment and do it right now. It feels silly, but you kind of see, is that a good feeling? Is that something you really like? Now imagine doing that at that pressure and now up and down like it's a cheese grater, okay? That's gonna wake you up, right? So if that happened, you went, and they went, hey, could you not do that please? Or even if they just go, they're still responsive enough that their that you can confidently assume that they are getting enough oxygen, they are still conscious enough that it's not time for this intervention. So that would be a best case scenario. They're on the ground, you call first responders, you continue to monitor, say, hey, help is on the way, and you do that. You do all that, you do the sternum rub, and Shane is, ooh, out cold, right? Not waking up, not moving. This is a pretty severe thing and you don't feel that. So then you move to the next thing. And this is where things get a little bit weird because you've taken first aid or CPR training. You assume the first thing to do is get first responders. And in a room like this, that could still work because there's lots of people here. But if it's just you and the other person, it's actually flipped when it comes to opioid response. First thing you want to do is open up one of these. I'm on my back. It's head tilt back, just like you do if you've taken any kind of CPR training. Same thing, just that nice little angle back. And then again, this is the business end. Easiest way to do it for me is I make sure I never want to push this button unless it's in the nose, fingers to the nostril, okay? Anything outside that, it's going to go everywhere, okay? For the sake of demonstration, I just want to show you. A lot of times people say they have a nose spray. Their doctor told them to prime it. Do I prime this? Watch what happens if you prime this. Boom. You see, it's dramatic, right? That's getting up where it needs to go. This is done. Business over. So never use one of these unless you're doing a demonstration like I am, or it's up the nose. You spray first, first spray, then call first responders. Tell them all the information. They'll say help is on the way. That gives you roughly the amount of time. We're looking at 60 to 90 seconds to get the naloxone to work. If they are non-responsive still, by the time you finish that phone call and they say help is on the way, second dose, each of these boxes come with two doses. Second dose, ideally second nostril, push it again, okay? On average, again, averages only work as well as the data that we have. Current averages state though, that the average overdose requires 2 Narcan doses, so 8 milligrams of opioid reversal drug in order to successfully reverse an overdose. Okay, so that's 1 Kloxxado, 2 Narcans, okay? Hopefully that's enough to wake them up. You're good to go. You say, hey, help is on the way. And we go from there. Leave them in what we call the recovery position. You've seen that, right? Just put them on their side. Hopefully they stay there. A lot of different ways people can react. Sometimes they jump up and they say, I'm not staying here. You tell them, you encourage them to stick around. But at the end of the day, they have bodily autonomy. They get to do what they want to do. But one thing to know is this acts pretty much, if you've ever used an EpiPen, kind of the same idea, right? You have an allergic reaction, boom, stab in the leg. Nobody's going to say, well, you're good to go. Go back to work now. They know that is the temporary fix. You go to the hospital and you make sure that the allergic reaction is ending. This opioid reversal basically works like an angry cotton ball. So you've got ball and joint, opioids, opioid receptors. We love opioids. Our bodies love them. Nobody really knows why, but we just were literally built for them. This comes along, knocks all those opioids out of the system and sits here so the opioids can't get in to the transmitter, okay? But it doesn't do anything to the opioids that are there, okay? They're still floating around in the system. So depending on how your body metabolizes naloxone, how your body metabolizes opioids, on average, 60 to 90 minutes of opioid reversal. We have seen multiple times when individuals who have this done and don't get medical attention afterwards will go back into overdose. So encourage them to go see a first responder, okay? Short, sweet, to the point. Happy to answer any more questions. You have our contact information. I can also come back at some point and do a much larger, but at the end of the day, all you need to know, if somebody is non-responsive, if you check them and they are not awake, current best practices is assume that it is opioids, because if you don't use this, first responders will use this. It's the first line of defense. Use this, call for help, continue from there, okay? We'd love to talk with you more at some point about the programming that we have available and some of the training. We'd love to kind of coordinate with various organizations, but thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your time. And I know we would love to talk to you, and unfortunately we're gonna get stopped on the road, but if you hang around, if you have the time, I would love to chat with you, as I'm sure other people would as well. So thank you so much for the presentation. It was really useful. Just gonna conclude our meeting. Our next meeting is on June 12th, 2024 at 2 p.m. at the Seal Beach City Council Chambers.
For safety's sake, I'll speak while I'm sitting down.